a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One third dating insights, one third self-love guide, one third compassion training. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, this is a call-in radio show. So if you have something to add to the conversation at any point while we're talking, give us a call. The number's 895-1114. That will get you on the air. You can also attempt to message us on the Facebook, and I will do my best to read any questions that come through that. But yes, join our conversation as we talk about love. We talk about our perspectives, your perspective. Weave your story into the mix. We're going to get this hour started with some music that Mr. Adam selected. Would you like to introduce this song?
Oh, just feeling the way peaceful, beautiful, loving vibes from the planet Venus.
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Bruce Jenkins Insurance and Financial Services. Attention baby boomers turning 65, new to Medicare, leaving an employer plan and looking for competitive quotes. Bruce can help and may help you reduce prescription and insurance costs. For answers about Medicare, you can reach Bruce Jenkins at 530-781-3592 or visit brucejenkinsinsurance.com. for a complimentary consultation. some beautiful sounds and music from the planet Venus, bringing in some love, bringing some peace here to your ears and to the radio station here at KZFR. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you, Adam, for being here tonight on Love in the 21st Century.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. So what do you have in store for us in the direction of our conversation?
Well, I was just wanting to remind myself, basically, that love is the most renewable natural resource that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that if I want to see more love in my world, in my relationships, then it's pretty basic. It's up to me. I can love more.
Mm-hmm.
I can remove my obstacles that I put up within my own mind to loving. And as those subside, as those settle down, then the loving nature, which is natural to us, then comes forth more readily. Because I always think of like the babies, they come out, no one has to explain what love is, how to be loving. It's 100% innate to us. And babies are the biggest love generators without knowing anything necessarily. So it's like what we think we know and cling to, turns out more and more gets in the way of who we really are and how that can benefit the world in a significant, in a practical, nuts and bolts, concrete, meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
That's who you are, loving. That's what we need more of. Thank you.
Can you go back to there a moment where you said something about what you cling to and something I didn't hear the full part about what you were referring to.
This is something. Oh, and I don't got who got the quote. There's a number of folks who have a similar quote, and I'm paraphrasing it, but it's like it's much easier to communicate or educate someone about something when they understand that they don't know anything about it.
Right.
If I think that I know something about this and I have my mind made up about it and it's incorrect, someone who wants to educate me has a greater hurdle to jump over, or to they have to penetrate through or convince me that how I've initially misconceived of a situation is preventing me from getting to actually perceiving the situation. So, we were talking about that in the context of how we go from being a pure love being born to share and express and communicate love and satisfaction to a grumpy old curmudgeon who doesn't have any time for it, you know, has so many more priorities on top of it, and doesn't really see the value. Why we have this oddball show? There's one show, you know, on KZFR. We devote an hour to talking about this, and then there's just gazillions and other talk shows like going on continuously.
Right.
Where we're reviewing basically how humankind is messing up.
Mm-hmm.
Focusing on that.
Mm.
Not saying that that's not, you know, has its role, has its place. We've got, you know, if we can't correct what we don't know is going wrong, but what do we correct it with? I'm just saying in my own personal life that if I'm able to bring more tolerance, more compassion, forgiveness, and genuine positive regard to my everyday encounters, they go smoother. There's more abundance feeling, more juicy feeling. So that's easy said. I'd like to accomplish that. But then I encounter, these inner obstacles.
Uh-huh.
What I think I've learned and who I think I am, how I have to be, how it was modeled to me, you know, consciously or unconsciously by my grown-ups, you know, as I was growing up. They already supposedly grew up, and they were modeling it to me consciously or unconsciously. From the cradle, there's this thing they call like cradle hypnosis.
Mm.
We're bonding, you know, as these little very open beings. And that first primary bond that we make, what's its nature? What's its quality? There's been some amazing breakthrough psychological studies on correlating the type of bonding that an individual receives in those first year of life and psychological profiles of the adult 30 years later.
Wow. I'd be interested in those studies.
Yes. I have to put it out there and say footnotes will come later.
Right.
But it goes back to this work, wonderful work of Sue Johnson,
mm-hmm.
who wrote this amazing book called Hold Me Tight.
Mm.
And she has this process called emotionally focused therapy, EFT. Different EFT than the tapping.
Mm-hmm.
And we might have touched on that before.
Yes.
But it has to do with the bonding and the snags that happen in the bonding and how we can renegotiate them, how we can transform them. And it's wonderful, wonderful depth psychological work. And it's done mostly in the context of committed relationships. She does couples. It evolved out of her couples counseling.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when couples like hit rocky roads, you know, and it's not all just woohoo, Valentine's and love, you know, that you really have the stuff with which to work on, to work through as a path.
Hmm.
But then it's like, we got all this stuff to work through. What's the process? And that's where these things like mindfulness, meditation, introspection, just saying, being able to take some time to be with yourself, take yourself on a date. And say, it's just you on you. I'm going to have this time where there's no extra stimulation. I'm not distracting myself to anything, but I'm introspecting. I'm going to look and take a good look here. Why? Because I'm worth it. It's this unknown territory, which is so very close at hand, where the obstacles to love lie and where the key to accessing them also is to be found.
Inside.
That's right.
Yeah. It's interesting what you mentioned about just the symbology to me is interesting of saying that only an hour of KZFR is dedicated to love. Fortunately, an hour is dedicated to love on KZFR in comparison to all the other hours that are dedicated to other things. And thinking about that application to my own life or to anyone that's listening in their lives, and how much time do we often take for ourselves or to focus on that topic of love? And as I came into the studio earlier, I was in a mood, and I, you know, emotions, they wax and wane, and today's been one of the heavier days for me, and it was interesting because what I had been doing was focusing a lot on sort of negative stuff, like not like not like the end of the world or like terrible things happening to me, not like that culminating of negative, but just like this kind of subtle negativity where you don't even know that you're being negative, focusing on things of like where you're lacking at or areas that you could grow in. And it seems like to my mind, you know, kind of a mindless or like insignificant, not like a big deal. Okay, like, oh, you're focusing on that stuff. And so like my alert on myself, because I kind of have this like mental alert that goes off when I'm like, oh, you're being negative. You're being negative. But it kind of flies below the radar.
Oh, right. It's the
yeah, it's like
the little fuzz, quiet.
It's just like this, yeah, this like kind of quiet noise that I don't really hear, but it's like, it's pervasive and it's there. And before I know it, you know, I've been in that space for like an hour or two, and I finally am like, what am I doing? Like, I'm really focusing a lot on what isn't happening, and it doesn't feel good, so I'm going to stop. So I stop, but then I don't really give it, like, I don't, like, try to sort of, like, bring that introspection of where it was coming from or give myself the self-love that I'm needing in that time.
Yeah, because you're clearing that out.
Right.
What you're going to fill in.
Right.
Its space.
Right. And so I just stopped and then try to continue about my day. And then that energy was still there. And so it was still seeping out into other places and attracting more energy to match that. Because, you know, like just in an energetic sense, the vibration that we're feeling attracts more energy of that to us. And so...
That's right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm not in a grumpy or, you know...
No, it's great.
But there's this intelligence, too... being able to see the negative and to understand the obstacles and to understand the situation when it's not completely hunky-dory. We're not saying, you know, you just put on the pink sunglasses and everything looks beautiful. It's like we're looking at things and we should be able to look at things realistically.
Right.
At the same time as... I understand that I'm taking charge of, you know, the background tone in my mindset. And maybe I have like a little bit of a advantage because I absolutely love my work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so tremendously rewarding, satisfying, challenging. It's like I actually get paid to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would be doing it
anywhere.
Yeah. So, and that was by cosmic design. I never like, oh, when I grow up, I'm going to be a doctor of Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any connection with that. I didn't have any understanding. You know, it wasn't in my world.
Right.
So, it was like, the world beat me down till I just didn't have any idea of what to do, who I was going to be, or where I was going to be. And then the universe started just like, here it is, this is what you're supposed to do. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do when I grow up? I still don't know. I can't see. And it's just like, right there. So that's my personal story is a big lesson in trusting the neutral time. It doesn't seem like the life is going forward too much, but sometimes it takes that. You're just like, whoa, limbo. I don't got definition or identity or social... positive, you know, no one's, oh, that's great. You know, you're a student of Chinese medicine. Wonderful. You know, my folks, my family was like that when I went and told them, I'm going to become a doctor of Chinese medicine. Like, oh, really? A faith healer? You're going to be a faith healer? I'm like, well, if you want to think of it that way, okay. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't any support. And it's in our culture, there's not a lot of support for students, for people being in this growing, learning place. It doesn't have like a it's not a status thing. You're not like out making money. Right. You're like in between. You're getting to the point where you can get out and start working. But it's different in different cultures. They really value education and people who are learners in their life. And my job is such that I have to keep learning and reviewing the material and going deeper with it. You know, the medicine itself is vast.
Right.
And I'm learning new stuff about it every year. So that's one like thing. If you haven't found your livelihood, you know, if you're just working the job to make the paycheck, that's okay. That works for a while. But sometimes to like hear the calling, to get like, what is it that's you're going to wake up and you're going to be like, whoa, I'm psyched to be doing that again today. You know, I'm just going to get better at that every day.
Right.
To find that, sometimes it takes some meandering. It takes some, you have to kind of, I had to let go of who I thought I would be, what I thought I was doing for a good bit of time before the path opened up that way in terms of livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
We've known, but that's the thing about, you know, what you do and curiously, like, how much we define ourselves by the livelihood. The work, when you meet someone at a party, sometimes you're the, hey, what do you do? Oh, this is what I do, you know, for money, it means.
Right.
And I met this beautiful guy on the beach in Mexico some years back, and we were meeting and getting to know, and he's like, so what are you passionate about? Was his question, you know, instead of what do? It's like, you know, what's your focus? And I was like, wow, I can't really say, you know, I know what I used to do, what I'm doing now. But it really makes you think. It's like, what is your focus? What is it that you are here? What's your talents, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you were saying, you're kind of focusing on the deficits.
Right.
It's like, I know where I'm weak and where I need to grow. That's there. But also, you know, what's your strengths? What part do you naturally excel in and bring to people? You know, I can just say how you are with people and how you bring. It's like we're talking here, and you're bringing out the best in me every month, every week, whenever you talk to somebody.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know, like one hint, one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting topic to try to attempt to share and navigate on the air about my personal life. But yeah, it's not. As I was mentioning before we got on the air to Adam, and just like where I'm at with the transitions in my life and. Yeah, just kind of figuring out where things are going in terms of work, in terms of where I'm living, and it is it's not like a not knowing. So I guess like if I was to say something that I know that I'm good at, it's that like I'm good at generally making up my mind and making things happen. Like if I want something, then I like having a radio show, then I will persevere. So that's that's definitely a skill that I have. It's just that it's in that precipice, I guess. Like I have that thought of when I'm standing right before I went bungee jumping, and I'm standing and I'm looking over the edge and I'm terrified.
You bungee jump?
Yeah.
Nice.
Skydove.
Wow.
And I'm terrified of the idea, though I know I'm completely safe. I mean, as safe as you can be, as long as you trust the equipment and somebody else with, you know, control of your life. But yeah, I was completely safe, and yet I still was terrified to do it. Yet I was there and was going to do it. Mm. And so I've that feeling of choice in this moment. And I've been here before, and I know that's kind of like inching. And so so the time that I did go bungee jumping, I actually went with a friend of mine, and she decided to wait. No, she was supposed to go first. She was the whole reason that we were going to go. And then we got there, and she looked over the bridge, and she was like, "No, I can't do it." And I was like, "No, you can't do it. We were in Costa Rica."
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you have to do it. This is the whole reason we came. And so the bungee jump guy asked me if I wanted to go first, and I was like, "Okay, I guess I'll go." And he counted to three, and I didn't think twice. I jumped off that thing so quickly. I mean, because it feels like the weights are going to pull you off of the bridge. Like, that's how heavy they are, that are on your ankles. It's like the harness that's holding you in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was off, and you know, for the first, like, for the 30 seconds that you're falling, as you're free falling to the ground, and the ground's coming closer, and you're like, "Oh my God, what did I do?"
Oh my gosh.
And then, like, right before you're about to give in is when it pulls you back up. You're just like, "Fine, I'm done." And you thank God that it pulled you back up. But the point I wanted to share that story is watching my friend bungee jump, she went up to the edge and came back. And she went up to the edge, and she came back. And they counted the three, like, probably four or five times before. I didn't even think she was going to do it at that point. But I feel like that story relates to my experience in life right now, and, like, the transition that I'm experiencing, is that I'm walking up to the edge, and then I'm walking back. And then I'm walking up to the edge, and I'm walking back.
Mm.
And it's okay, I mean, in the end, I suppose, because I'm, you know, it's all just part of the process, but...
I have another story that relates exactly with where you left off just mm-hmm. now.
Nice.
Because in a way, it seems like a bit focused on the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we say the future, it comes out of the present moment, 100%.
Right.
How do we get there? It's the quality of what we're bringing to the present moment. That is the stuff of which we build our future out of. So, this was when I discovered flumes in paradise. I just moved up to paradise. This is some many years ago. And then I went down and found these beautiful PG&E flumes. And they go along for miles and miles in the trestles. And they're super pretty. And they're lined like with serpentine rock, and if it's really hot out, you know, you just hike up. Maybe you're not supposed to do this. Don't do this now, of course, with the high waters and everything, but you walk up and then you can float back. It's just one of the big perks about paradise. And then I found this spot where it actually goes under the mountain for quite a ways. There's a big channel, and it disappears under the mountain, and it looks like a flume ride from the amusement parks from Southern California. And I hadn't seen anyone do it. I hadn't, you know, but I was like, okay, let's give it a go. And I jumped in and started going, and then it got dark, you know, the water in there got a lot colder. I felt the ceiling above me. It was getting lower. And then there was a little dip, and I picked up speed. And then I couldn't see anything in front of me. It was pitch black.
This sounds terrifying.
And there was that moment. Terror. And then there was this other moment that came on it. It's okay, like, trust the water. The water is going in here. Somewhere the water is coming out.
Right.
Just relax and stay in it as it's flowing. And sure enough, I had a great ride. It just, you know, made this gentle curve. And then I started to see light. And out the other side is delightful.
Nice. Fantastic. My mind went to the possibility of there being rocks or something in there that would not let you go through. Maybe the water would go through.
Right. But there's a big enough channel of water flowing, and I'm in it. It's right. Like one way or another, I'm going to go to where the water's going.
Right.
So that's the other idea of what we're in right now, where we're headed right now. It requires a certain degree of trust.
Mm-hmm.
We might not be able to see that next step. That was similar in my life. And there's this balance. It's like when to trust and then when to really put forth the effort. Like when someone said, oh, you can go to Chinese medicine school. It's like I had to work harder than I had ever worked in my life to really make that happen and to become the doc that I never thought I would be. Never would have thought I could have been.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way, this becoming, who it is that we're becoming, it has to come from who you are in your being. Who you are in your being, we said at the beginning, is something full of love, quite natural. It is the most abundant natural resource we have. Every mama who breastfeeds a baby knows it. Every baby who's been breastfed by a mama knows it.
Mm-hmm.
It's this glue. It's the stuff that keeps us healthy and on our growing edge.
Growing edge. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century. Adam Mose and Tamara Wickma talking about love, talking about life. If you have something to chime in, please give us a call, 895-1114, and we'll get you on the air.
We'd love to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. And you. So, Adam, at the beginning of the show, you were mentioning that in the process of the love generator to, I don't remember the technical term that you used, but like the grouchy begrudgend, we'll just call
curmudgeon.
Them that. Curmudgeon.
Yeah.
Grouchy curmudgeoned. You said that there are these obstacles that get in the way of us receiving love.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was curious if you might be willing to elaborate a bit more about what you mean about those obstacles and how they show up or
Mm-mm-mm.
how we create them.
Mm-mm-mm. Karen Horne was a one student of Freud, and she developed this technique called like self-analysis, like, oh, you have to go and you get psychoanalysis from the doctor, and that's how you figure yourself out. She said that there are these neurotic trends that make up the personality, that to have a strong ego, it has to be made up of certain degrees of neuroses. What the neuroses, how they play out, is like a way to shield oneself from love. As it's been delivered in the past, it wasn't free, it wasn't unconditional love. So we develop these coping mechanisms that help us through in those critical times. But then we wear those coping mechanisms as if that's who we are in the subsequent relationships. In a way of saying, you know, like very grossly, I got hurt back then, you know, I'm never going to get hurt that way. So it means I can't even get touched because I have this protection. And Wilhelm Reich, another student of Freud's, got himself in big trouble because he said it was something actual physiological. that there's some way that the patterns of energy in the body reinforce one another, then it's like character armor. That's what he called it. And he discovered these ways of releasing that, of breaking that up.
Isn't that what some would call somatic release?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Because, I mean, that sounds like something that I've heard before. It sounds like something that I've experienced before. I definitely feel that a lot of the meditation and energy work and deep introspection that I have done in order to even feel comfortable enough to be the host of such a show is... it was definitely physiological.
Yeah.
Like, I could feel it in my body. My body feels differently.
Mm-hmm.
Having gone through those different meditations and responds differently in terms of the tightness of my muscles.
Yep.
And the flexibility of my body. So I definitely support that guy. I'm sorry he got in trouble.
He was pursuing some pretty radical means. This was like back in the 40s and 50s, and it was like before the 60s and the 70s. Everything, you know, that he was promoting would have been, you know, he was just like, unfortunately, 10 or 15 years ahead of his time.
Right.
But the main path that I've been working with for some 30-plus years is Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And there's these four foundations of mindfulness. This is what my mentor, my great spiritual guide, B. Alan Wallace, was teaching on last weekend in the Bay Area, and I was so fortunate to be able to attend him. He's a remarkable author and... meditation master, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
But he was teaching on the most basic kind of Buddhism. It's really simple. The four foundations of mindfulness. The first one is mindfulness of the body. Mindfulness of the body in the body. Being able to be aware of changes and subtle sensations within the body. And I know you did a Vipassana 10-day
mm-hmm.
some time ago, and I've been very fortunate to be able to do a couple of those throughout my life. And we start right out, you know, it's a bodily sensation that you put your awareness on so as to allow the mind to start to settle down.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so concrete. It's something very, very, you know, physical, obvious sensation. If you're alive, you're doing it because you're in a body.
Mm-hmm.
And that body can be a vehicle to your awakening. There's no big mind-body split in the Eastern approach. It's seen as a continuum because we have sensation and we have awareness of our body. And that's what we want to work with initially.
Work with the body and its sensations, absolutely. When we were talking briefly before about my experience of Vipassana, and yeah, before I went to Vipassana, I would say I was more a hobby meditator, meaning I meditated when I felt like I wanted to meditate.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have like a regular practice of meditating. And after meditating for the better of 10 days, it definitely changed my perspective and my understanding of meditation.
Mm.
And as you were mentioning, being able to focus on the sensation in your body, it simplifies that process of meditation so that you're not feeling like so. Sometimes you get abstract and you stay in your mind, which is, you know, kind of counterintuitive to what you want to be doing when you're meditating, which is not being controlled by your mind or your thoughts.
Right.
So I relate to that in my experience.
And the amazing thing, we're more specifically, the physiological process that we're attending to is the breath, is respiration. And turns out that that's just fantastically powerful in allowing the mind to settle, allowing the thoughts of this and that, the rehashing of the past memories, and the hopeful or fearful projection about future scenarios, you know, the way we pull ourselves out of the present moment, which is where we're actually alive, which is where we're going to be growing and making the stuff of our future. It's this curious thing. You know, it's like where I was going into that cave and it was getting dark, it's like I wish I was at the end of it, but I couldn't. I had to get to the end of it by really being present in the moment where I was.
Right.
Similarly, the way to negotiate those inner obstacles that we have to the expression and the reception of genuine love, it's within us right now. The path and the method that we can incorporate in the life, not separate from the stuff of the life, it's the breath. It's like the awareness of the sensations in your physiology. Taking a moment, we're saying introspection begins with like a check-in with the body. Where am I holding tension? What happens if I relax that tension? Oh, nothing bad's going to happen. In fact, you know, now my shoulders feel a little bit looser, you know, my neck. Everything is starting to... The potential for it to relax happens when I scan it, when I check into it in an impartial way. This is the thing they talk about. Like, if it's tight, if it's even painful, I don't push it away. I don't judge it. You know, oh, tight neck and shoulders. I just say, oh, that's what's going on there. I'm not going to put myself down for it. But breathe into it, be with it, and understand that it's going to flow. It's part of this huge flow. Everything that you can experience is in the process of change and becoming. So there's this thing, like you watch it and you're with it, and sure enough, it's slowly changing. There's things about ourselves that we think initially is immovable. Mm-hmm. Like the dam spillway, you know, it's built in concrete, it's unmovable, it's not changing. And then very quickly, things start flowing. We see how flow changes things.
Right.
Everyone in Butte County, we pretty much understand. If you try to be like a rock, then the little drop of water long enough makes the canyon, makes the buttes so beautiful. There's these big slabs of pyroclastic flow from Mount Tehama. I don't know, geologic time, you know, how many millions of years ago. But then that water, just the simple little gentle water, working it year after year. And then you got fantastic canyons. How things change.
Such great analogies for water and time and being present. I'm curious, though, that was the first facet of mindfulness?
Right, the first foundation.
First foundation.
Yeah.
Mindfulness. It's the body.
That's the body, being aware of the body within the body, mm-hmm. meaning your own subjective sensations. The second is feelings.
Mm.
Being aware of your feelings within the feelings. And it's similar to the body, where if we're in a opposition to our feelings, then they persist. They say, what we resist persists. So if we're having bad feelings, then we open to them. We experience them. We don't have to indulge them. We don't have to act out of them. If it's really negative, of course not. But we are aware of it and not fighting. And similarly, we notice it changes. Like the body sensations. The feelings also come and go. They change this way and that.
So to take what you're saying as a idea for a practice, is it possible, or are you suggesting that one would feel an emotion, sadness, anger, joy, tends to be the more negative emotions I think of, but they're feeling something, and then to just sit with it, not speak until that feeling passes?
Well, in the context of this practice, you're also experiencing it in your body.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, this is the sensation that my body gets from this feeling. And, in fact, I talked about my buddy Fritz. He grew up in gangs. He grew up in orphanages. He was a regular bad guy, you know, before I met him. And he was this amazing, awesome, loving father and modeled that for me. And he said he discovered that he didn't have to get angry because he learned how to not breathe for it.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean that anger isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
It's there and it informs. It's like your feelings are your inner compass. We make friends with them. They don't have to boss us around, though. And understanding what feelings are going on because of the ability to feel into your body and understand is like, oh, he's like, his breathing is changing. He's got the awareness. He's developed this more ongoing kind of awareness of the breath. And he can feel, oh, the I'm starting to breathe tighter in my chest. It's getting more rapid. You know, it's like the heat is coming up to my face. It's like, oh, I'm pissed. And then who is this going to serve? Why, you know, throw that at anybody? And being able to just be with it and work with it and right. let it subside again. It's an energy. It's a response.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an intelligence. We're not saying, you know, we at the beginning we're saying, oh, negativity isn't a bad thing. We don't shy away. The feelings, very important to be able to be aware of the state of your own emotions.
Mm-hmm.
From within the context of the sensations of your body. Very, very powerful. And then we also see that in meditation, when you really, really get to these quiet spaces, like the Vipassana retreat, 10-day retreat that's offered at these centers, California Vipassana Center offers them, like, every 13 days, every 14 days, there's another retreat. Absolutely brilliant. So wonderful. Such a resource.
Mm-hmm.
You can go there and really experience the depth, the quiet, you know, the serene equanimity part of your mind. And in that, there's this big secret. The secret is this kind of physical joy begins to percolate up through your experience. It's like, don't tell anybody about this. They don't mention it because it can happen. You're not supposed to go looking for it.
Right.
But turns out, if you're in a calm state of mind and you're with yourself and everything is relaxed, contented, there's this natural kind of bubbly happiness that comes up and doesn't seem to derive from any external circumstance. That's what's different about it. When we think about the happiness, and we want to optimize happiness, we want people to be able to experience the joy in their life. That's what it's all about. Usually we go around trying to create the optimal situation outside that'll give me the joy. How can I arrange this so I get the joy? And that means, oh, I have to go to school for these many years. I have to get this in this relationship. All these things we think is going to bring me the lasting joy, happiness outside. But then it changes. What we thought was going to bring us joy, getting that promotion, now we're in charge of this thing, and it's, too much. What is that? The Peter Principle. There's something in management. People rise to their level of mediocrity. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting a little negative here. But it's possible that the things we thought were going to, arrange to make us have the happiness doesn't work out that way.
Right.
This is a totally different type of happiness.
And so I would like to get to our last two before the end of the hour, since we're having some really good in-depth conversation about each of those, which I think is really pertinent. And so, but I would like for our listeners, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left, just so you get a time check on what we got. And for anybody that's listening, we've covered the two of the foundations of meditation, which is the body.
Mindfulness of the body.
Mindfulness of the body.
Within the body. Mindfulness of the feelings within the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Then, mindfulness of one's mind. So we were kind of at the beginning jumping ahead. Mm. We say introspection.
Right.
But now we have a more of a grounding. We have more of a basis to understand what it is when we say our mind. This mind, which is present, which is aware and is beyond any description. How's that? Well, mind is the thought. Like, what's thinking? Where is all this thinking coming from? Imagining, envisioning, hoping. It's the mind. So obviously there's something there.
Right.
But when we look concretely, like tangibly, for anything there, it's very curious. It's a very different order of phenomena. Which was why those bright boys who came up with behavioralism said, psychology, what, we're supposed to study mind? No, we can't look at the mind. That's not the topic of psychology. We only look at behaviors. These things go into the black box, and then behaviors come out. That's the behavior. And it works.
Right.
But as actual humans and wanting to go to the depth of understanding who we are, then we want to look and become more acquainted with this all-creating sovereign, they say. How everything you experience, everything you bring to yourself is a product of your thoughts. If you have wholesome thoughts, if you have compassionate thoughts, that's the type of action you create. That's the type of energy you bring to yourself. It all depends on that. So we need to get to know this all-creating monarch.
Mm.
Then, then the fourth, I'm jumping ahead now.
Yes.
Is to be mindful of the phenomena. Mindful of the appearances which arise to the mind.
Mm.
And that's where we can take the meditation into everyday activities. It's nice. We can meditate, you know, an hour in the morning, an hour in the evening. But then what do we do the rest of the 22 hours in the day? It's all devoted to, you know, this greedy idea and me trying to get that and fight over this guy. And it's like, and then just 2 hours of peace. Mm-hmm. I'm not making much progress mm-hmm. on the path. But if we're able to really have those strong foundations, then the arisal of every phenomena then is incorporated in the path.
Thank you for that perfect synopsis of ways to incorporate the mindfulness practice into our lives. And I can't help but think that we're, myself included, that we're often very stuck in the mindfulness of the mind and wanting to like jump to that place
yeah.
versus
right.
the first two.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Where is the mind happening? Oh, it's happening in your body.
In your body. Check there first.
Check there first. That's where you're going
to... Get back to me. Wow. Thank you for that, Adam. Food for thought. Things to bring into my own awareness and share with all of you, and how we're loving ourselves and how we're showing up for ourselves in the best way possible, how we're showing up for the people we love, the work that we do, and the communities we live in. So important to be aware of how we're feeling, how we're feeling in our body, how we're feeling emotionally, how we're feeling mentally. It's good keys.
It ain't me, it's Buddha. Buddha said that 2,500 something years ago.
Yes. Go Buddha. give some props to the Buddha.
And go you.
Yes.
For being open and hearing it.
Thank you. And you. So we're going to let you get on with your evenings. Ecotopia is coming up next. Thanks for tuning in to Love in the 21st Century. We're on every Tuesday, and we will be seeing you, talking with you next Tuesday.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond.